Looking in from a state like California, which, as you've described, has ambitious renewable targets and a booming renewable industry, what would Australia need to do to emulate this model, and what would it mean for regional areas like Townsville?
First thing, you know, when you're in a hole, you've got to stop digging. So they should not be commissioning whole new reserves like the Galilee Basin and trying to start again into the 19th century model of Quarry Australia. They should be sending clear long-term signals and certainty to attract investment so that they can really build it out. The kind of policy and politics that ACT, again, has really shown by setting the mark and building on it and achieving it in great ways. If Australia were to do that, I'm 100% confident you could have a fantastic diversification and portfolio of wind, solar, and other projects, storage. You know, we've done that in California just in the last couple of years, really building out our storage capacity, employ lots of people in distributed ways. You know, it's a distributed architecture, this new energy network that we're building, and build value for Australian companies, not foreign companies and holes in the ground. And, you know, I mean, there are good signs here, aside from the ACT's leadership. You know, just today I see that the Lion folk are putting in 100 megawatts of storage in a big solar farm in South Australia, with or without the Wetherill competition. Lots more of that to be had. And we've got to repower Australia, we've got to phase all the dirty stuff out, and we've got to just get on with it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, Vaishali, the story of Adani's environmental legacy in India is actually heartbreaking, isn't it? In Australia, our politicians are telling us that India needs our coal. Is this actually true? And what are your concerns about that?
Wherever there have been coal projects, whether it is mining or the energy projects, thousands of the farmers and fisher folks have lost their livelihood.
Yeah.
There had been a disease around, skin disease, so many, like respiratory disease, and there had been already a research done on this in this area.
Mm.
So coal has not given us real energy, which we need it. Coal has not given us good health. Coal has actually taken away all our traditional livelihood, and coal has been a disaster for us. And I don't see in this disaster where is humanity.
Yeah, where is humanity? Blair, have you got any thoughts or comments on that?
Just a couple. I think one thing Vaishali and I have talked to a little bit about, when we were up in Brisbane doing the roadshow talk, one of the newspapers suggested that those who are fighting the Adani coal mine were racist, because we were denying Indians, poor Indians, the chance to have energy.
Wow.
So you have to think about how turned around that thought really is. We are a group of people who want to stop a coal mine because it's bad for Australia. It's also bad for India. India is ready to make the transition to clean energy. The last thing they need is help with more polluting coal. What they really need help with is how to make that transition more effectively and leapfrog past the mistakes that many of us have made in the developed world on energy. And that takes health into concern, our environment, in our case, the coral reef. But more importantly, the climate impacts, all the things we know from the impacts we're already seeing from our commitment in Paris and what that means. I mean, as Danny said earlier, the commitment is very clear. There can be no new coal, oil, or gas if we're going to live up to those commitments and try and keep our global warming temperatures below 2 degrees and attempt a safe living climate. That's true in India, that's also true in Australia. So the answer is clear. We don't need to give them coal, they don't need our coal. What we all need is the transition plan and to get on with it.
Exactly, and just one last question for Millie. You mentioned about engaging the Indigenous communities. How are the communities engaging with the conversation about renewable energy?
Yeah, so much. I mean, it's really hard, you know, like, I feel like for, at least in my youth, which, you know, I'm quite
still
young.
Still there.
Yeah. But at least for my whole life, and the stories that I've heard from my family and communities and people that I meet around the country, like, we're exhausted of saying no. Like, we constantly just have to fight and fight. And it's, you know, no to Adani, like, no to fracking in the Northern Territory, no to this, no to that. And I think we really do want to be a part of building solutions that work for our communities. But we need to actually be supported to do that. And it's very hard to do that whilst we're still fighting. So a couple of weeks ago, I was really lucky though. I met one of my idols who I've looked up to for quite some time, Melina Massimo, an Indigenous woman from Canada, who some of you might have heard of the incredible story of the work that they've been doing. Their communities faced the destruction of their country from the tar sands. So, you know, it's devastating. But at the same time, they've mobilised their community and they've built a solar farm that powers the health centre there, it powers the school, it provides an economy. And, you know, they've educated people about it at the same time. And here in Australia, we do have communities that are doing the same. We've just, you know, we've started to see Aboriginal part-owned, like, solar battery storage companies. We, with Melina's visit to Australia, we saw the launch of our First Nations Renewable Energy Network. Young people who we work with, particularly up in Borroloola, are trying to actually, you know, when we're in Parliament lobbying politicians, they're not just talking about the projects that we want to say no to. They're saying we have the vision for alternative economies. We want solar. We want, you know, we want ecotourism. We want all these different forms of development for our people that don't exploit our culture and our land. So, you know, it's a hard battle out there, but I think, you know, we have to have hope and we need people like you to stand with us and to not only fight and say no, but to build the solutions.
Isaac and I have been working with 13 organizations around the country who are all keen on stopping Adani. And that's, you know, a little bit unusual. 13 groups, very different, have put aside their different styles, their different issues, and decided that this is the line in the sand issue for Australia at this moment. This is our issue. This is our tar sands moment, and we are at a point in time where we have to choose between an old way of doing things, a polluting way of doing things, and the clean energy future. And Adani offers us that choice. And our federal government needs to hear from all of us and our state governments to understand how important we think this issue is. So we've heard from speakers, Danny, Vishali, and, you know, and even right here in traditional owner lands that are fighting all kinds of challenges around the same issues. But it all comes back to the same kind of challenge, which is making the change, but having the force of political will and people behind it to make it happen. So that's what Isaac and I have come to talk to you about. How can we all get active on these issues? How can we make a change? And first of all, I think it's really important to say that the plan we've come up with, you know, it's a multi and varied plan. The 13 organizations involved have tried lots of different tactics over the years, and we think we've put together a plan that covers off the best way we can go at this. But we're going to also be open to hearing from you as time goes on and hear new ideas. So those organizations are the Australian Youth Climate Coalition, the Australian Conservation Foundation, Get Up, some folks here in the crowd from Get Up as well, The Sum of Us globally, which is fantastic because it's an international organization, Market Forces, which does fantastic work on how we get at the money and how we stop money going into fossil fuels, the Australian Marine Conservation Society, and a range of others. But 350.org is our organization, and we're working here in Australia, but also getting help from our global colleagues to try and raise awareness about the Adani mine and how we stop it. So there are a few key areas that I'd love to just put in front of you. Three areas that we think are going to be the way to stop this mine. So are you with me? Are we going to be able to work together to get this mine going and off the table? Fantastic. That's our plan. So the three key areas are, first, building the movement. Second, shifting the politics. And third, stopping the money. So quickly, I'm just going to mention building the movement. Why? Well, we all know this mine has a lot of dark forces behind it. It's got money behind it. It's got politicians behind it. It's got influence behind it, and a lot of influence going along behind the scenes that we don't even know about. Mm. So to take that on, it's going to take all of us. It's going to take a movement in Australia and a voice from international sources as well to say, we're not going to take it, we're not going to accept it, we're going to do what we can, and we're going to stop it.